A major earthquake leaves more than 1,000 people dead in Turkey and Syria. Plus, Ukraine warns Russia is planning a major offensive.
Russia's definitely banking on the idea that it is now seizing the initiative, taking the momentum, and President Putin of Russia can show the Russian public some real results on the anniversary of a war that it initially, at least, completely messed up.
And investors take a shine to gold as one miner offers billions to buy another. It is Monday, February 6th. I'm Peter Granitz, covering for Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. At least 1,300 people have died after an earthquake shook southern Turkey and northern Syria early Monday. Turkish officials have already appealed for international help. Jared Melson, a Middle East correspondent for the Journal based in Istanbul, says the region struck by the earthquake is home to millions of people displaced by the Syrian civil war, and the worst damage could be inside Syria.
These are people living in makeshift camps, in buildings that might not be very well constructed, with very limited medical infrastructure, hospitals that are already overloaded. So it's a very severe crisis in both countries. And we are only hours into this. We're only now starting to get a picture of the full scale of the destruction.
And we'll continue to bring you updates on this developing story on WSJ.com. We're exclusively reporting that Russia and Iran are proceeding with plans to build a proposed drone factory in Russia. Sources say the two countries are aiming to build a faster drone that could pose new challenges to Ukrainian air defenses. It's a sign of the growing military alliance between Iran and Russia, with Tehran already having provided Moscow with hundreds of drones for use in Ukraine. Russian and Iranian officials did not respond to requests for comment. U.S. defense officials tell the Journal that China had previously launched at least 4 balloons over the United States that went undetected before leaving American airspace. The U.S. on Saturday shot down what it determined was a surveillance balloon. The officials said that 3 of the prior incursions took place during the tenure of former President Donald Trump and one earlier in President Joe Biden's term. National security advisors to Trump said they never knew of any of the breaches. Over the weekend, the Chinese Foreign Ministry called the downing of the balloon a serious violation of international practice and said the craft was for meteorological research and had been blown off course. Public Storage has made an unsolicited offer to buy its smaller rival, Life Storage. The $11 billion proposal comes a month after Life Storage rejected a previous offer. The all-stock offer values each Life Storage share at $129, higher than the $110 it closed at on Friday. If the deal proceeds, it would further consolidate the fragmented private storage market. Public Storage says it already controls about 9% of the market for storage space in the U.S. as of December 2021, making it the largest operator in the country. And earnings season continues this week with about half of the S&P 500 having reported so far. On deck for today are earnings reports from food giant Tyson Foods and video gaming company Activision Blizzard. One of the world's largest gold miners is trying to buy up another major gold producer. U.S.-based Newmont has offered to buy Australian Newcrest for nearly $17 billion. The offer comes as the price of gold has started to track upwards. Rhiannon Hoyle has the story for us. She covers the mining industry from her base in Adelaide, Australia, and joins us now. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for being here. Rhiannon, $17 billion sounds like a lot of money. How does this potential deal stack up?
It is a lot of money, particularly in the mining industry in general. We saw a sweep of deals a couple of years ago around 2019, where particularly amongst North American gold miners, there was a lot of deal making, a lot of single acquisitions, but also tie ups where the likes of Newmont, who's involved here, purchased another very large miner to become the largest gold producer in the world. So it's not surprising entirely that they've continued their acquisitive strategy. Here, there had been a lot of people watching the industry waiting for a day where Newcrest would fall under the eye of one of its rivals, and today is the day.
Will this deal go through?
It's looking at this stage like this might not be enough to get Newcrest shareholders across the line. The proposal that's been made public today is actually already a sweetened offer from one that was submitted a couple of weeks ago. Newcrest didn't disclose that initial offer at the time, which it says it rejected as too low. And so this is the second proposal that's been put forward by Newmont. Newcrest says that it is considering the offer and will come back to update the market. Our reporting and discussions with several very large shareholders and analysts that follow the company suggest that while it's a reasonable offer, it won't be sufficient enough to get it done this time.
Rhiannon, this deal comes at a time when gold prices are on the rise. Is that a factor?
To be fair, mining companies are loath to deal make around rising commodity prices because commodity markets can be incredibly fickle. And while we are experiencing a run-up in gold prices in recent times, one of the major factors that seems to be playing in is more around the share prices of the companies. Newmont has had a pretty good run in recent years, whereas Newcrest typically trades at slightly lower metrics. And speaking to some Newcrest shareholders, they would say that Newmont has timed this in an opportunistic way at a time where Newcrest share price is kind of weighed down.
That is Rhiannon Hoyle. She covers the mining industry for the Journal. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome.
And coming up, amid a stalemate in Ukraine, Russia appears to be making gains in the eastern city of Bakhmut. That is after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Ukraine is preparing for what's expected to be a new major Russian offensive in the war. Russia has spent the winter fortifying its defensive lines while continuing to launch five lines of attack. Among them is the contested city of Bakhmut. Ukraine has yet to cede control or retreat from there, but this weekend, President Volodymyr Zelensky called the situation in eastern Ukraine very difficult. Matthew Luxmore joins us now from Dnipro. He's a reporter for the Journal who's covering the war in Ukraine. Good to have you here.
Thanks very much.
Well, thank you for being here. And I want to start with Bakhmut. The battle there has been going on for months. How close to victory are the Russians?
They're getting closer to surrounding the city from the north and south. So initially, they tried to break through Ukrainian lines inside the city in the east part of Bakhmut, and now they've taken a different strategy by kind of trying to take surrounding settlements from the north and south, which now at this point places Ukraine in a very, very precarious position because Russia is getting closer, especially with all the mobilized troops it has brought to the attack to surrounding the city.
What's the significance of Bakhmut?
It's mainly a symbolic victory for Russia if it happens because the front lines in Ukraine have been largely static since Russia made gains in the summer. It does have some strategic significance in terms of its connection to routes to the major cities in Donetsk region of Slavyansk and Kramatorsk, which would put Russia much, much closer to retaking the entirety of the Donbass if they were to take those two towns. But really, it would provide a huge boost in morale for Russian troops, and it would give them the momentum after months of not really making any significant gains.
Outside of Bakhmut, how is Russia preparing for the coming offensive?
Russia has mobilized hundreds of thousands of troops since September, and now tens of thousands have been brought into the fight in Ukraine. They've been training up for this major offensive in Belarus and also in western parts of Russia. And now Ukrainian officials say that the process has begun whereby in the space of the next 2 weeks, those new mobilized and trained troops will be brought into Ukraine to man positions in the east of the country and prepare for the major offensives that Kyiv says are coming in the coming weeks.
Ukraine is preparing for this coming offensive by training on new weapon systems that have been donated by the West. Will it get there in time? I mean, will the soldiers be prepared to use them in time for these offensives?
It's unlikely the tanks which have been pledged to Ukraine will arrive in time for Ukraine to be able to repel this coming Russian offensive. And Ukrainian military officials are very aware of this fact. They're trying to expedite the delivery of this armor, and Ukrainian soldiers are already training on the Leopard 2 tanks and the British Challenger tanks that Britain has pledged to provide. But really, this is quite a tense situation for Ukraine right now, because it has been urging the West to provide weapons for a long time. And now it's in a position where Russia is essentially trying to exploit the absence of these weapons in order to mount this huge push before they arrive in Ukraine. So Ukraine is really in a position where, if this major offensive comes to coincide with the anniversary of the war on February 24th, Ukraine will be maybe for a while in the position where it just simply has to hold on and repel these attacks.
Matthew, you mentioned that we are coming up on the year anniversary, February 24th, of the invasion. And I wonder, a year in, who's got the upper hand?
This is a difficult question to answer, of course, because if you had asked me this 2 months ago, Ukraine was just coming off the back of a hugely successful and really ingenious offensive to retake almost the entirety of the Kharkiv region from Russia, which really stunned the world and showed Ukraine's Western allies how successfully Ukraine can use the military aid that has been supplied to it. And it also took Kherson, the only regional capital that Russia had seized since the start of the invasion. And it was buoyed by those successes and talking about liberating all its land within the scope of this year. Since then, Russia's mobilization drive, which began in September, has really started to influence the situation. And really, it's a question of throwing a huge amount of manpower to swing the balance. And in Bakhmut, as we've discussed earlier, this has been quite successful.
That is The Wall Street Journal's Matthew Luxmore in Dnipro, Ukraine. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
And finally, Beyoncé has officially won the most Grammy Awards in history. Last night, Renaissance won Dance Electronic Music Album of the Year, which gives her 32 Grammy Awards in total. But there is a but. The Wall Street Journal's Neil Shah says Beyoncé once again missed out on what he calls a major award.
On that front, we got a little bit of an upset. Once again, Beyoncé lost out on the night's biggest awards, Album of the Year, Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Best New Artist, but she can't win Best New Artist and she's not a new artist. Beyoncé hasn't won one of these four big Grammy Awards since 2010, which for many fans is odd, just given that she's one of the most celebrated artists of the 21st century. So most likely, a lot of her fans are unhappy about that, despite the record being broken.
Those major awards were snapped up by Harry Styles for Album of the Year, Bonnie Raitt for Song of the Year, and Lizzo took home the award for Record of the Year. And that is What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz, The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.